Did you know that 1 in 5 adults has a disability? The beauty industry has long been a global trendsetter, influencing beauty standards and societal norms. However, amidst the glittering world of cosmetics, there lies a question that demands attention. Has the beauty industry failed the disabled community?
So reviews play a really important part in making people not fearful of that. And for us, it's always quality first. We don't want people to think, oh, it's made by people with disabilities, so therefore I'm going to have to compromise. It's like, no, absolutely, 100%. We're innovating in this category.
Today, I want to explore the multifaceted dimensions of inclusivity, representation, and sustainability within the beauty sector, with a focus on global perspectives. So let's look at this where we're based. So in the UK, according to a study conducted by P&G in 2019, only 4% of beauty personal care products directly address the needs of those with physical disabilities. And this includes things like thought through packaging, like, for instance, including Braille on products or easy to open lids. 14.6 million people in the UK alone are living with a disability. That's, just to put it into perspective for you all, that's 22% of the total population. And I'm going to lift this next piece that I'm talking about directly from an article that I read in Refinery 29. So it says, Professor Simon Darcy, UTS Business School and co-lead of the UTS Disability Network, says, chapters like this within the social narrative show that people living with disabilities are not at the forefront of thought. So in fact, they're in a position of severe social disadvantage. Inclusivity and sustainability are linked. We know this. We've spoken about it many, many times on the podcast. And when we talk about sustainability, if you're not being inclusive, or if you haven't thought about the different types of embodiment, then you're designing in a way that's going to exclude a large proportion of the population. They're either overlooked, omitted, othered, and forgotten about in a great deal of areas of social participation. That for me is really kind of hammered home how important it is for us to be inclusive across the board. It's not just about race and gender. It goes way beyond that. So let's look at a few digital versus in real life shopping experiences. The beauty industry has long been accused of making inclusivity sort of a tick box exercise, but there are companies out there who are trying to improve their products and services. They are normally larger companies, purely down to budget and things like that, why they have the capacity to do so. For example, Estee Lauder have introduced a voice-enabled makeup assistant, AI-powered app, which is really, really helpful for those who are visually impaired. Actually, drawing on another survey that I found, 95.1% of disabled people said that they felt that there were not enough inclusive or accessible beauty products currently on the market. We'll talk about some of the positive changes shortly, but here are a few of the other sort of more, I want to say negative points, but I don't want to say negative at the same time. So physical beauty stores often lack adequate accessibility features for disabled consumers, and issues may include narrow aisles, high shelves, and inadequate seating, making it really challenging for those with mobility impairments. And they don't always prioritize inclusive product displays. So if somebody is visually impaired, then it makes it a lot more difficult for them to explore the products on offer. Something that I've always found, and coming from a retail and I guess a retail education background, I have this thing where people need to be trained properly, whether it's to know your product, to know your business, but also trained to assist disabled customers. So lacking knowledge about inclusive beauty products or communication skills, it was like not having those communication skills can really, really hinder somebody who has impairments. The availability of testers in physical stores may not be designed with accessibility in mind, creating challenges for those with really, really specific needs, such as things like really simple touch-sensitive displays for individuals with dexterity issues. A lot of beauty brands are looking at leveraging digital platforms to enhance this accessibility. So apps like Estee Lauder's voice-enabled one that we mentioned is going to really help push this forward. And disabled consumers can benefit from online beauty communities and reviews. And I mean, it's a positive that people can benefit from these, but it shouldn't just be online. A lot of brands are starting to implement virtual try-ons as well. This feature allows customers to digitally test products before making a purchase. That is a real benefit for those with mobility issues who may actually even find it physically challenging to try things on in-store, or let alone getting to the store. I think one thing that we also need to mention is obviously a lack of representation. So critics argue that the beauty industry often fails to represent individuals with disabilities in marketing campaigns and product ads, and even across their social media platforms. And the absence of diverse role models really does perpetuate that societal beauty standards are and will always be exclusionary. I think we do talk about packaging quite a lot here on Sustainably Influenced, but I think it's a really fair point and something that we'll actually talk about in a bit more detail with our guests later. So many beauty products come with packaging that's difficult for individuals with disabilities to open or use. And it's just a sheer lack of consideration for accessible packaging. It really limits people's independence and their participation in beauty routines. We also really need to increase the adaptive products available. The beauty industry has been really slow to innovate and create these sort of adaptive products that cater specifically to the needs of people with impairments. So products such as makeup applicators and hair tools and skincare items are often designed without considering the diverse needs and abilities of their users. Now, we've spoken about the cons, so to speak. So let's talk a little bit about some of the pros and the things that we are doing well within the beauty industry to help those with disabilities. In recent years, there has, I will say, even from like a gender and a race perspective, I've seen an increase and a notable shift towards greater inclusivity in marketing campaigns. Some brands are really actively working towards diversifying their campaigns, featuring more models and influencers with disabilities. And I think it's a really positive change because it's a more realistic kind of inclusive portrayal of society. And if you've got a child or somebody younger than you who follows you, who connects with you because of that disability and them seeing that representation, that is what matters. We mentioned the adaptive products, but one brand that is trying to do a little bit more is L'Occitane. They have started to include Braille on their packaging, and it has been that way for quite a while now, I believe. That things like magnetic closures need to be brought in, and products need to be designed for individuals with mobility and dexterity issues. And it seems like a really easy thing when you think about it. But when you're a product developer, I think so many brands and businesses fail to include this at the initial point of conception. Education really does need to increase around this area as well. And I think that's partly why I wanted to do this episode. Today's guest that we're speaking to is an amazing company who works with disabled individuals to allow them to have the opportunity to work where they may not be getting that opportunity in other places. And education is really key. So many brands are starting to take that step to educate their staff and their customers about the needs of the disabled community. Awareness programs are really, really helpful, and these companies are really aiming to increase and create that more welcoming and inclusive environment for everyone, because beauty is supposed to be for everybody. While there are challenges and the challenges do persist, there is an evidence of positive change within the industry. There's been a big move towards inclusivity and sustainability, but it's gradual, but it is promising. And brands are actively working towards representation, developing adaptive products and embracing sustainable practices contribute to a more equitable and diverse beauty landscape. The call for sustainability in the beauty industry aligns with the broader push for inclusivity, that you can't deny it. Sustainable practices not only benefit the environment, but also contribute to creating a more ethical and inclusive kind of industry. So we've spoken about a couple of these points before, but I just wanted to put a spin on it with regards to sustainability. So brands are looking at incorporating sustainable and accessible packaging are the ones that contribute to a positive shift in the industry. So if more brands were doing things like this, it would become more of the norm. Packaging that is designed with recycled materials and is easy to open, it benefits everybody. There are a lot more cruelty-free and vegan products available now as well, which is another positive push. It's things like this that align with the ethical values of not just the environmentalists, but also with people with other health concerns, people with skin concerns, and other ethical considerations. I think we all have that sort of social responsibility as well. And that's not just on us as the audience or as the consumers or as the shoppers or as the general population. It also falls on those who are creating the product. So these brands who do actively engage in social responsibility projects that include everyone and especially disabled individuals demonstrate that commitment to inclusivity. Now, speaking about social responsibility, I've briefly mentioned our guest earlier on, but today's guest is Diane Chung, the founder behind Melior, a remarkable social enterprise which is based in East London. Meaning better in Latin, Melior's mission is nothing short of inspiring. They are tirelessly tackling social injustices by creating hundreds of hours of meaningful employment opportunities for individuals with disabilities through vegan, refillable cleaning and beauty products that perfectly combine brains, beauty and expertise and style. All profits from Melior are reinvested to employ people with disabilities and long-term health conditions. Let's chat to Diane. Let's talk about Melior, because it's an incredible business. What you're doing is absolutely game-changing, and you've really impacted the employment landscape for disabled individuals. How has it impacted it? And I guess is what we want to know a little bit more about. And what specific measures have you implemented to ensure inclusivity and equal opportunities within the company for everyone?
Wow, what a loaded question. Well, first of all, thanks for inviting Melior. Melior means better in Latin. I think that's been the guiding principle for us. It's the yardstick we use for making all the decisions that we make. So yes, we do employ people with disabilities. And disability, it isn't a minority concern, because some people just don't think it applies to them. But actually, 1 in 5 adults of working age have a disability. And that could be your brother, it could be your sister, it could be someone down the street that you know is affected by disability. But surprisingly, 70 to 80% of disabilities are invisible. I think that's what we're trying to change, is why are disabilities seen to be a negative thing in society? Because we only see abilities at Melior. So I guess we founded about 3 years ago during the pandemic. And the root of our story comes from another social enterprise that employed people with disabilities. But unfortunately, when they had a new owner take over during lockdown, he didn't pay furlough, didn't pay salaries, didn't pay maternity pay, pensions, nothing. And I could have sat there and gotten angry, but actually, I guess after all my years of working in marketing, I thought, actually, you know, I've got an amazing skill set and I can do something with this. And so Melior was born. And I guess we were at the core face at that social enterprise of understanding that people with disabilities, they don't fall into, I guess, a pigeonhole. Do you mean you can't just pigeonhole people with disabilities? And what I really felt is this whole sense of community, their sense of self-worth, the sense of ability to be independent, both financially and socially. You could see it in their faces, just the joy when they came to work. And unfortunately, when the organization closed during lockdown, that was no more. And so they were back looking at the same four walls, twiddling their thumbs, trying to figure out how to get a job. And that's what we're trying to address. We're trying to give people the opportunity. So Melior does mean better in Latin, but also it means opportunity. It means the opportunity to find a job that's meaningful, the opportunity for people who run businesses to actually consider how to incorporate people with disabilities in their production processes, in their supply chains. It just opens a door, really. And that's what we're proud of. It's about changing perceptions, but also about inspiring other businesses by transforming their mindsets around disability.
To see something like this, where you're giving people a chance where 20 years ago, they probably wouldn't have had that chance, absolutely incredible. And one thing that I love when I was doing my research is that all the profits from the business are reinvested to employ people with disabilities and long-term health conditions, to give them that step forward, that chance that they wouldn't get in many other places, regardless of everybody's DEI policies. It's how they cultivate those people that work there. I can see that it's almost a tick box.
Exactly. Well, that's what we did differently. We said yes. We didn't have any filters at all. We knew that people with disabilities are one of the most dedicated staff. They're loyal and they're passionate about what you do. And this is one of the things that people don't think about when disability first comes to mind. They think, oh, the costs associated with it, they're not as productive, but it's not based in fact. So that's what we did. We opened our doors, and I guess we operate like other businesses, right? So we still have overheads. We have to get our brand out there to people to be aware. So we're so grateful for this opportunity. But what I guess Melior does differently, and it has from the very beginning, is that we've been built from the ground up through goodwill. I don't get paid at all from Melior. Everything gets reinvested 100% into our business. And it costs a lot to run a business. And we were talking offline before about a lot of sustainable businesses that are struggling in the last year, even perhaps years before, rising costs, you know, softening demand. Like, how do we make sure that we retain our values, we stay true to them without compromising? So I've been approached and said, actually, you should be going into plastic. You should be going into supermarkets. And I'm like, okay. Clearly, this person doesn't clearly understand what Melio is all about. And that's the beauty, I think, of starting a business like Melio. You are in a decision-making position. And you say, actually, how do I want to build this business from the ground up? What do I say no to? And what do I say yes to wholeheartedly? We said no to plastic. Because, I mean, I come from Australia. I understand that plastic can only ever be downcycled. It'll end up as microplastics, which have been found in our food chain. There was an article, it was found in our hearts and lungs. It's also in the air that we breathe. So every single time somebody brakes on their car, those brake pads, filaments are going into the air. So there's also this element of what consumers don't know. Like, there are big companies who dominate certain sectors, and they do it because they got scale. But they did that scale potentially by making compromises. So I know that for our hand wash, we do a powdered gel hand wash, is that we're competing against companies like Carex, and they produce how many hundreds of thousands of units per year? Maybe they're using recycled plastic, although that's not the solution, but that's being churned out day in, day out. But we don't do that. We make the decision to not add to that problem, but actually think about circularity. Think about materials like glass, like aluminium, which are infinitely recyclable and don't lose their quality when they're recycled, or they don't downcycle like plastic does. So going into concentrates, for instance, using refills was a natural thing for us to pursue. And I know that you're a very big fan of sustainable fashion. So I was thinking about how I could sort of like visualize this. It's like, you know, when you go shopping for a dress and you have to go to the store, you might enjoy it. You go to the store, you go to the effort of finding the right dress for you, the right size, it looks great. You put it in a bag, you make the effort to go home, and then you have to hang it up at home until you're ready to wear it. But with cleaning products, for instance, it's like receiving the collar of a dress flat packed in the mail. So it posts to your home at your convenience. You put the collar on, press a special button. Hey, Shazam, you have your dress ready to go. When you're ready to go out and ready to use it.
That's a really good analogy for what the product is.
I wish it existed. But it's sort of like it's value throughout the whole entire chain, not just in the feeling that, oh, I'm doing good by choosing a brand that supports people and or employs people with disabilities. I'm also choosing a brand that makes decisions which align with my values. So cleaning products, or shampoo or hand wash, 80 to 90% of it is water. And that's just one simple fact. So then you think, oh, actually, all that water gets transported, all those M25s and all the M1, 2, 3s, 5s around the UK to get to your local store. So when we think about sustainability, I think it's always mindful to think that the design phase is absolutely critical. So the footprint of a product is decided at design stage. And the benefit of Melio is we started from scratch and we knew what we didn't want to do and what we did want to do. And we've kept 100% to that. And it's reflective in all the innovation that we're doing. Like I mentioned, the powdered gel hand wash. Did you know that you can get a powder, pop it in a bottle, top it up with water at home, and Shazam, you have a gel hand wash in minutes. You don't have to wait overnight. Some people, just the reaction is like, oh my God, like, mind blown.
I've actually used the product and it's lovely as well.
Oh, glad you love it.
It's a really nice hand wash. I've used powder to gel in the past, that some of them have been a bit dry and this one isn't. It's very moisturizing and you feel like you're actually using a luxury product.
I know what you mean. Sometimes when you try a new brand or a new product, you don't quite know what the outcome is going to be. And so reviews play a really important part in making people not fearful of that. And for us, it's always quality first. We don't want people to think, oh, it's made by people with disabilities, so therefore I'm going to have to compromise. It's like, no, absolutely, 100%. We're innovating in this category. We're sort of saying to the Goliaths of the industry, look at us, what we're doing differently, and people are responding. Like I said, there are things behind closed doors. So we produce everything. Everything is made in the UK. We don't outsource any of our operations at all. So what that means is there is so many opportunities to learn and grow within the business. If you're interested in being involved in marketing, you can when the opportunity arises. But we're 100% in control end-to-end of how Melior is produced. So all our cleaning products are produced fresh. So if you've placed an order, we would have made it the day before it goes out. And our hand washes are created in really small batches to preserve the essential oils that we use as fragrances. And this is a decision that we make because we know that quality and your experience as a consumer is ultimately which is going to make or break us as a social enterprise.
First of all, wow, I didn't realise they were made in such small batches because that's incredible. We've been speaking about the sustainable practices and how refills are, I guess, better. How do you feel you've influenced consumer behaviour and preferences? And I kind of want to know how you feel that the practices that you've implemented have contributed to fostering a more environmentally conscious community.
I read in the paper yesterday that the number of corporate busts is like the highest in the 30 years. For Melior, I think what we do is different. Like we do things differently on so many different levels. And it's really hard sometimes for me to summarize it because people just brazen go, poof. With us being a sustainable business, it's about making the right decisions. But not just for yourself and your future as a sustainable business, but also for your employees. And when we have that holistic approach and we have brilliant products, then the element you're talking about, the community, it grows. And so we have the most loyal customers possible. Like we had a review that came in the other day and it totally made my day. I was like, this is the best hand wash refill. And I thought, God, that's a wide sweeping, but they felt it. So they wanted to share it with the world, which was brilliant. And making an impact like that in terms of changing people's behavior, because you can change a person's life as simple as a switch. So whether you're wiping, cleaning a window, removing a stain, or washing your hands, it's changing your hands. You're actually affecting somebody else's lives. And it becomes, I guess, not social kudos, but something that people can pass on to others. Like, have you heard? Or they might try the hand wash in their home and go, God, it's a brilliant hand wash. And they go, oh my God, you have to know the story. And it's sort of that wildfire. It's the willingness of our customers to share what we do. But we're talking about a very small subset of the community who care about sustainability, because I'm being really realistic here. There are some people who just don't care. And the issue is the gap between intention and action. So there are, what's the statistics? 7 out of 10 consumers, probably skewed more towards millennials and Gen Z, who are willing to pay more for a sustainable product. But when you get to the shelf, whatever shelf that may be, the options have been refined for you. And actually, do you end up acting as you intended? And I think it's that gap which can be the fall down for sustainable businesses. And so what we try to do is reinforce the value that we create. So continuing to innovate, continuing to think about new and different ways to be in front of a different audience, to spread our message in a way that doesn't make people cry. It makes people feel empowered. When you think about it, like how much money you're willing to spend on, I don't know, let's use fashion again, for a new handbag versus how much you're willing to spend on a hand wash, your purchase decision criteria are very different. But the amount of money that you spend is minimal for a hand wash versus something like a handbag. So we all need to choose. We need to choose if we want to lead a sustainable and more circular life, what are we going to make a change? Because you can't solve everything. And I get excited when I see like new businesses flaunting their wares on Instagram, like, yes, yes, yes. And then they pull out the refill, which is made out of non-recyclable soft plastic. And I was like, oh my God, I slapped my head. I'm like, oh, that was so close. So as a brand, instead of saying they're doing bad, we just forge ahead with what we know is right. And that fundamentally hinges on reducing the amount of waste that you produce, but also reusing everything. So if you have a bottle, it could be plastic, it could be glass, make sure that you reuse it as much as possible. And I know with fashion, for instance, you can rent, you can buy secondhand, or you can buy new. So there are options available to us. And I think it's when we start seeing the ripple effect, that's when we know we're making a difference. So you might start out with Melior hand wash, and then you might follow that through with the beauty products that you use. And it sort of has a knock-on effect. It's the influence that you have on your friends to change the way that they behave.
We've spoken about a lot of the companies that have shut, but I want to talk about some successes. And there are a lot of companies that have really gone from strength to strength. And I think with it being a social enterprise, how do you measure success in terms of like the changing perceptions of sustainability and disability? And how do you promote what it is that you're doing?
Well, I guess every social enterprise has a theory of change. And this is like a document that says, what changes are you enabling? What are your aims? What are the outcomes from that? So in our theory of change, it's about changing attitudes. It's about transforming mindsets. And it's about giving life, you know, transferable life skills to people who wouldn't normally be given those opportunities. And that in turn is the outcome of other organizations being inspired to do something differently as well. So there are a lot of social enterprises coming out who are contributing to like social causes. There is different models of social enterprise. So you have social action, so in place, so in the production of your products or in the distribution of your product, you create social benefit. There are other social enterprises which, after all operating expenses and salaries have been deducted, then they will contribute to a third-party cause. And I guess it's a question of traceability. You know that every single time you purchase from Melior, you are affecting positively somebody else's life, also positively affecting the environment because it's toxin-free, there are no VOCs in the air, etc. But how do you know when you purchase from a brand that says that they're going to do something, that that actually is happening, and whether they have that, I don't know, control of their supply chain to make sure that their suppliers are also doing the right thing, that it's not just a house of cards of trust which falls down. It's like Boohoo, for instance. I think it was around 2010, and there was an expose about their practices in Leicester in the UK. It was their public listed company, and so it grabbed headlines. And the share price dropped 25%. But did that change people's behaviour? There is a subset of the community who won't change because they can't change. And that's fine, and we have to respect that. And I think when you talk about measuring the impact of social enterprises, it's about seeing people considering the wider number of options. So we talked previously around when you go to the shelf, your choice has already been refined. But actually, you have the power to define what's on that choice. Like, you have the power to say, actually, the internet is available. Just, you know, type into Google. And you can actually define that for yourself and influence those around your friends. So ultimately, the measure of success for any business is profitability. For us, we have metrics around the number of people that we've employed, but also it's about the ripple effect. We can tell you how many, I should have done the calculation, but how many bottles we've saved from plastic waste by using our products. Our cleaning products are not toxic to aquatic life. When you look at the back of a cleaning product, they usually have like red logos saying, or X's, it's harmful to aquatic life. Don't keep around children. We don't have any of those things because we're using bioactives. This is a huge education piece. And little by little, I think it could be quite overwhelming when you go in the sustainability space. I think we mentioned earlier is, what is sustainability, right? Sustainability by its definition is not taking away from future generations. And I guess where we sit is actually what our goal is, net positive. We want to leave this world in a better place than where we started. And fundamentally for me, it's about legacy for my children, for their mindset, their decision-making criteria. Because one day they'll need to get a job. They'll need to, you know, choose vehicles if they exist in the future. Do you know what I mean? They'll need to make decisions about what products they choose. And I want that to be my legacy. For many people, would say, actually, is this what I need? Actually, do I need it? Can I repair something I already have? Can I reuse something that already exists without doing extensive damage to the earth?
Just thinking about the future a little bit, because as you're saying that we want to leave the planet better than we found it, I guess what's next? What's next for Melior? I want to know what's to come.
Well, I know that Melior is making change in its immediate term, but really we need to grow in order to affect policy. Policy can change things dramatically. And I'm not like a campaigner by any stretch of the imagination, But when we grow to the level that we can employ someone who can campaign on the issues that are important to us, then you'll see us everywhere. So if you want to know what's happening in 2024, well, we've got, you know, more plans in the pipeline, of course, to sort of just pop up on the radar. Our Powder Digital Hand Wash just, it won an untold number of awards. So we're releasing a new fragrance in spring this year. So we're really excited about that. And then we are also, I guess it's very much in line with our values of giving people the opportunity. We're releasing a student design brief, inviting students to design the next iteration of Melio's bottle. So we do a beautiful glass ash bottle, but actually we are going to go into retail like Harrods, into Selfridges, into places like that. And we want the must-have glass bottle, which can be used interchangeably. And this is probably something I don't talk much about with Melior, but our packaging is all modular. So the glass bottle that you have for a hand wash can then be used for a stain remover. Then it can be also used for all-purpose hero, which can be, and that product has multiple functions. So it's about creating that moment that people can connect with us as a brand and then deep dive into, oh my gosh, what does this brand do? And then go, whoa, why didn't I know about this sooner? The biggest challenge is, guess, you have the big industry players. They like it that people perhaps don't have an in-depth understanding of their operations, because it enables them to continue what they've been doing for, you know, tens of decades, because they get the economies of scale. Change is not good for big companies because they have to change everything. It comes at a cost. Whereas for us, we're fleet of foot. So yeah, big things. But, you know, investment has always been a question. And it does require a compromise of values. So we're trading very carefully. Melio is 100% owned by us. It has no external investment. Like I mentioned before, I don't take anything from Melio at all. It's all reinvested back into the organization to help us grow and to help us have a wider impact.
How do you feel that the rest of the sustainable space or businesses in this sector can improve not just on their environmental kind of policies, but looking after the people, and whether that's people who are able-bodied or people who have got long-term illnesses or disabilities, how can they improve on that? And I think, what is it like one key thing that they can learn from your business that they can take forward?
Wow. Well, I would say sustainability is not dead. Like, we have macro forces like cost of living crisis, but the desire from all generations, particularly younger generations, is for there to be change, that things can't continue the way they currently are. And having an inclusive approach, it may seem scary, but actually for us anyway, it's just the way that we do business. It's not a policy. It's not a measure. It's just we said yes. So we actually considered it. We didn't close the door on it instantly. And I think it's that mentality of doing better. So every single decision that we need to make across the way, across our journey, is how can we employ people better? How can we make our products better? How can we make our community better and emboldened to go out and defend on our behalf? So I think it's scary for some smaller businesses to try and tackle sustainability, green, but also sustainability in terms of social practices, because there isn't a lot of guidance. It isn't a pathway that most people pick because they don't know it's available to them. So I guess what we're saying now is it is available. There are people with disabilities who want to work, are willing to work, but just simply are not given the opportunity to do that. Reach out to Melior, reach out to me. We're an open book. Maybe we shouldn't be, but having that sort of open attitude and sharing best practices, maybe like small businesses can partner with us in our back end to make us more efficient. It doesn't mean that we all have to stand separately in fighting our individual causes. We all, at the end of the day, are businesses that need to survive. So if there is a network, a partnership that happens that enables us all to grow and to chip away at our individual, you know, bugbears, of which mine obviously is the underemployment of people with disabilities, then that's success for everybody. but it goes against business, you know, theory. Everybody's a competitor. But again, it comes back to community. What is wrong with the sense of community? And actually, I think that's a real strength of those who are sustainably focused, is that we get it. You don't need to educate us. We get it. But the thing for me is, what's next? Let's work together. And I think that's one possible solution of not seeing another sustainable business suffer and actually go from strength to strength.
Thank you so much to Diane for your wonderful insights. I was so honoured to speak to you today and learn so much more about your wonderful company and what it is that you're doing.
You can listen to previous episodes of Sustainably Influenced on all good podcast platforms and follow us on social media at Sustainably Influenced, and make sure that you sign up to our newsletter at www.sustainablyinfluenced.com.
This season of Sustainably Influenced was produced by Content is Queen, sound editor Amber Miller, and presented by Bianca Foley.